You are listening to the number one movie in America, ridiculously self-indulgent Oscars pregame bonus episode. My name is Robin Hitchcock, and I'm joined with Sean Collier.
Because otherwise, we just have to, like, talk on the phone about everything we think about the Oscars. And what would be the point in that?
Why?
Not sharing it with you.
Right. Why have conversations and not record them and release them to the public? So, the Oscars are this coming Sunday, April 25th, and I am very close to completing the Oscars death race, which, for people who have never heard this podcast before or ever met me in real life, is a game that you play with your life where you force yourself to watch every Oscar-nominated film. Yes, every film in every category, including things like original song and sound. And the tricky part, the shorts, which is the main piece of the death race I have yet to complete, but allegedly the shorts packages will be available on demand tomorrow, Tuesday, and so I will watch them later in the week. For now, I have 2.5 features left, but I have seen all of the major category nominees. The only things I'm missing so far are international feature nominee, The Man Who Sold His Skin, original song nominee, The Life Ahead, and the second half of Da 5 Bloods.
Oh, right. Did you watch the first half, like, in June?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
And I got too stressed out, and I turned it off. And I said, someday I will watch this, and I had hoped that I would watch it in support of Delroy Lindo's Best Actor nomination, but I'll accept watching it for, what is it, nominated in Score?
Only in Score.
Ah, terrible. Terrible.
This will be, you and I both won the death race once.
I've won twice.
And you won one other time.
Yes, correct.
If you make it, you'll be ahead 3-1, because I am nowhere close. I thought I was closer than I was, and I counted this morning, and I'm at 25 of 41
feet. Oh, wow. Wow! That's much worse than I thought. So I guess I'll be telling you what some of these movies are.
You certainly will. I think the only thing in a quote-unquote major category I haven't seen is Another Round. If I watch something this week, it'll be that, and I would certainly like to. I swear I watched documentaries and films not from America last year, just apparently not these ones. Because I think I'm 0-5 in both categories. That's the big thing.
Oh, wow.
And then some stray that, you know, I didn't see Over the Moon or Shaun the Sheep movie Farmageddon. I haven't seen Love and Monsters. I haven't seen the one and only Ivan.
Well, I'm going to tell you which of these you should be watching.
I look forward to learning that, and then maybe watching them and maybe not. This is my central feeling going into Oscar week. For me, more than most people, the Oscars are bookending the pandemic.
Yes.
They kind of are for everybody, because last year's were just before things got real, and this year's are, you know, coming, because they're later, it's more than a year between, and it's coming as, you know, a lot of people, fortunately, get vaccinated. For me, last year, because of poor planning on my part, I didn't even see most of the Oscars.
Right.
Because I was at a basketball game I had tickets for, which was the last time I was in another proper city. We traveled to Cleveland for that. That was the last time I was in a big crowd. There were a couple of years in between, a couple of weeks in between then and proper lockdown, but that was really like the last hurrah in a meaningful way. And this year, 2 days after the Oscars, is the day when I'm considered fully inoculated.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So, you know, this starts with an Oscars that I didn't actually watch because I was having the last big thing I did before COVID, and ends with an Oscars where I've seen far fewer of the movies than normal because it was a weird year and I tried to watch things that brought me joy instead.
Right.
And that feels fitting, that this full Oscar year is also my COVID year. And after this, I feel, I don't know, it'll be normal, and next year I'll watch the likes of Love and Monsters. How do you feel at the dawn of Oscar week.
At the dawn of Oscar week. Well, I was sort of iffy on if I was gonna do the death race this year, as we've discussed on the podcast. For everything you just said, like, who wants to watch sad movies this year, right?
Right.
And then also, my husband was out of town last week because he is fully vaccinated and he was visiting with his fully vaccinated family. And so it's like, I'm alone in my house. Should I be watching all of these sad movies? Probably not, was the answer. And yet I did. And once I figured out that everything was available to me, I was like, I can't not do it.
Yeah, you're so close now.
Exactly. And then the other thing that really pushed me was realizing that I have not seen any one of these movies in the theater. And so finishing an Oscars death race completely at home is, I will never be able to do that again. So that's very exciting.
Yeah. Congratulations in advance to you.
Well, I mean, let's not get ahead of ourselves. I could get hit by a bus. One of the shorts could be missing, you know, who knows? But I am a presumed three-time winner of the Oscars death race, and thank you.
Yeah, and I say that congratulations with, like, I don't feel any, like, I at every stage of should I watch all these movies this year, when it was coming towards the end of the year and I was getting ready for a top 10 list, when I was getting ready to nominate for the Critics' Choice Awards, when I was getting ready to vote, and now, throughout, ever since Oscar nominees came out, I was like, should I watch all these awards? And I was like, nope, not going to care this year. I'll go back to caring a lot last year. I still have a lot of opinions about these Oscars, but I am happy for you and not mad at me. That's the key to pandemic living, celebrating achievements and ignoring failures.
So what we're going to do now is we're going to go through the categories and we're going to do a little bit of like should win, will win talk. And then also, because Sean hasn't seen a lot of these, I'm going to say what I thought they were. It'll kind of be like lightning round. You can't handle the truth for me, or hopefully lightning round. I don't know. This episode might be long, people. Okay. Like, you know, that thing where they had like this apocryphal story where somebody said, like, President Lincoln, how long should a man's legs be? And he said, long enough to reach the ground.
I didn't know that, but that's great.
This episode will be long enough to reach the ground. All right, so we're going to skip the shorts because I haven't seen them yet. I will say, for anybody who's like trying to predict who's going to win, when you watch the shorts, the one that you remember when it's all over, that's the one that's going to win. Sometimes weird stuff happens, particularly in the animated category, because of something like technically fascinating. But really, it's like whatever sticks out tends to win.
I filled out a here are my predictions, and I picked the ones that sounded like I could hear a presenter reading their name as the winner.
That's also a good rubric. What'd you pick?
If Anything Happens, I Love You.
Yep.
Two Distant Strangers and A Concerto is a Conversation.
Okay. I am guessing If Anything Happens, I Love You. I also have that one is about like school shootings. So. And then I picked White Eye and Hunger Ward. Again, I don't know. Those are my like gut feeling guesses.
Follow Robin on Twitter sometime around Thursday to find out.
Right, exactly. Yeah, Thursday is actually the day I'll probably be watching all of these. All right. So then let's talk about the documentaries, which you haven't seen any of?
No. And I'm telling you, I watched documentaries last year. They just weren't these five. If I watch one thing this week, it'll be another round. If I watch two, it'll be Time.
I strongly approve of those choices.
I saw Time lit on people's lists as the best movie of 2020.
So Time is a movie about a woman whose husband is incarcerated and she is filming her life and their children's lives to show to him when he gets out. And then also it's, you know, in the present, then there's an actual documentary following her around as she does prison abolition advocacy. So like, I feel like just from that summary, you can see why this is a really good movie. But like the thing that I think takes it from being a really good movie to being like a fucking phenomenal movie is that the main character, the subject, her name is, she goes by Fox Rich, I think. She is just a delight. Like, she is just a superstar. And she owns a car dealership, and it starts with her like filming a ad for her car dealership. And it's like, oh, I want to hang out with this woman. So it is really, like, you know, as bleak as it can be, given the subject matter, like, it's fun to hang out with her, and her kids are great, and it's just really, it's really well done and beautifully told.
What's the slug line for these other four nominees?
Okay, so we've got Collective, which is also an international feature nominee, and that is about a horrible mismanagement of public hospitals in Romania with tragic results. And it's very sad.
Yeah.
It is rough to watch, especially living in a country that is so defined by healthcare failures. It's like, oh yeah, yep, this will ruin your life. But I will say it is my second favorite movie featuring a Romanian with a robot arm after Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
of course.
Yep. And Crip Camp is a movie about disability activism, which I'm particularly interested in this because my husband is a advocate for people with learning disabilities. So he works in the disability space. This is specifically about people with physical disabilities trying to get accessibility in public transportation. And they did a sit-in in the 70s. The camp in the title is that a lot of the people who got involved in this sit-in met at a camp for kids with disabilities in the 60s. It was run by hippies, and it's like, how did they learn activism there, and how did they create networks there? It is a feel-good movie, and I think it is likely to win. I'm kind of torn between predicting that one and My Octopus Teacher. My rubric for what's going to win documentary feature recently has been, which one is the most basic? Which one would your mom watch on an airplane and then call you about?
Hey, the Amy Winehouse movie has an Oscar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Crip Camp and My Octopus Teacher are both a very basic, but great. Like, I don't mean that. I am a basic person. Remember, I am Rachel from Friends.
My Octopus Teacher is the one about the guy who's friends with an octopus.
Correct.
Right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And he's South African. And like this is the most obnoxious thing I've ever said. I tweeted this, but like, he's in False Bay and I've been in that water and it's so fucking cold. Like, and he says at the beginning, he's like, I knew instinctively to not wear a wetsuit. And I'm like, I'll kill you, you jackass. But yeah, I cried over the octopus. So, you know, the mole agent is a guy, a very old man who is recruited to spy on a nursing home for abuse. It has a lot of old people are cute content, but it is one of those documentaries that suffers from where is the camera crew? Do you know what I mean? Like, you really are asked to suspend your disbelief in a way that I couldn't.
The catfish problem.
Correct.
So you can go to PittsburghMagazine.com and there's a guide that I wrote that both has my predictions. And if you're not, you know, me or Robin, you know, what your catch up should be if you're kind of just getting to the big guys now. In any case, when I predicted for documentary, having seen none of the movies, I looked at like the expert predictions, mm-hmm. and the smart money was on My Octopus Teacher, and I went, nah.
Okay.
An octopus movie isn't gonna win. And Time was second, so I predicted Time.
Okay.
Now, your informed opinion, what's going to win and what should of these five?
Time should win for sure. My gut is telling me Crip Camp, but like, I understand why the smart money is on Octopus Teacher.
People just need a nice story about a man and his octopus.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
it was on Netflix. A lot of people saw it. It actually entered the conversation for a hot minute.
Right. Crip Camp also on Netflix, Mole Agent on Hulu, Collective on Hulu, Time on Prime. All of these are available to you for free if you spend money on subscription services.
So, international feature. I've still seen none of them. I'm sorry.
All right. Sorry. So, Another Round is the one you should watch. So, that is also nominated. It got the surprise Best Director nomination. So, it is a major nominee. It's a Danish movie, which is allegedly a comedy. I did not watch it as a comedy. The premise is sitcom-ish, which is that a group of friends who teach at a high school decide that they will try to always be slightly drunk. They buy breathalyzers and sneak vodka sips in between classes. So that goes about as well as you would expect.
Yeah.
It is, to me, like, harrowing.
Sure.
And Mads Mikkelsen is the main character, and he gives a truly phenomenal performance. I mean, he's so good. And I also, I want to bone him. And so I might be slightly biased, but he just does so much great subtle face acting in this. And there's so many, because, you know, he starts the movie very depressed, and there's so many scenes where, like, things are happening around him, and you're just kind of watching his internal monologue play out on his face. And then, you know, he does a great job of playing someone who is slightly drunk and finally feeling alive. And then I think, ultimately, also, you know, like, terrible things happen to these people, their lives are destroyed, right? But then the film, I won't spoil it for you, but it ends with one of the best scenes of any movie I've seen this year. And it is not really what you would expect. And I think that it leaves the movie with this really complex and really, for me, well-appreciated take on alcohol, period. Like, alcohol's role in our society.
That seems like a betting favorite. That's nominated. Collective is nominated. The two things I saw and expected to be nominated and were not were The Life Ahead, which is a Best Song nominee,
mm-hmm.
and La Llorona, the Guatemalan horror movie, which was nominated everywhere else. Instead, what are these three movies? You've seen two of them.
So I have not seen The Man Who Sold His Skin. I believe it is about a guy who literally gets paid to get tattoos. I think that's a very literal title. Better Days is a teen melodrama that begins with a public service announcement about how bullying is bad and ends with the cast out of character saying, "Together we can fight bullying." But it's...
That's not funny. It's funny that that's a nominee for Best International Film.
Right. And this movie, dude, like, if I saw this movie when I was a 13-year-old girl, it would have been everything to me. But I saw it as a 36, almost 7-year-old woman, and it's so cheesy. It's so cheesy. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of cool that it's nominated. Like, it is a movie for teenage girls.
Sure.
It's an Oscar nominee.
Good for, I'm sure, again, there are many movies in this category, and I'm sure many would have liked that slot, but
yes.
Okay, fine.
And Quo Vadis, Aida is amazing. I do not recommend watching it. Mm-hmm. It is about a massacre in Bosnia during the war in the 90s, and a woman who is the translator for the NATO army. She's the only local who speaks English, and she is trying to use her clout as their translator to save her family. Goes about as well as you'd expect. And then it has an epilogue about after the war that was, it was really, really powerful. I think it's one of those movies I'll be thinking about in 5 years. Hmm. Part of the reason I do this, to see these movies. But also, like, do you really want to watch a movie about Bosnian genocide?
Yeah, and there cannot be many nominations from Bosnia and Herzegovina. So, congratulations.
Yeah.
Two, that's tiny, and a country with a rough history there. Rare good news for them.
Yes.
I'm sure it's lovely. Another round certainly feels very likely to win. It's nominated in a major category. Depending on who you talk to, it was flirting with also a Best Actor nomination.
I think that would have been a justified nomination. I know it's kind of a crowded field, even when you weirdly put Lakeith Stanfield into supporting. But, mm-hmm. you know, I would have preferred the missing nomination go to Delroy Lindo, but it was a great performance.
Do you think has this one locked down, or?
I don't. That is going to be my guess, but I don't feel solid on that.
Okay. Is it the best of the four you've seen so far?
No, I think that Quo Vadis, Aida is a better movie, but I dramatically preferred watching another round.
Well, to enter into a category where I've, at least from here on out, I've seen most of them. Probably, kind of. And I've seen three of the nominees for Best Animated Feature. Brief me on Over the Moon and A Shaun the Sheep Movie Farmageddon.
Well, we'll start with A Shaun the Sheep Movie Farmageddon. Did you watch A Shaun the Sheep Movie, which was also nominated a few years ago?
Yes, and they had one of my favorites. For some reason, animated movies have not the best Oscar swag campaigns, but the most aggressive. Like,
okay.
I will get more stuff from animated, just sheer mm-hmm. in quantity. Than any other category. And they sent one of my favorites. It was like a little print, like a little frameable print of Shaun the Sheep watching an award screener and trying to figure out what to click on the DVD menu at the beginning that says, do you accept these terms?
Oh yeah. My gosh, that's so niche and so cute.
It was precious. So I saw that one and I liked it, but I probably didn't vote for it that year, but it's good.
My main response is that a Shaun the Sheep movie, Farmageddon, is not as good as a Shaun the Sheep movie. I also watched the second half of it with the visual caption, or what do you call it? The descriptive audio captions on. The captions for the blind on.
Well, why did you do that?
Because Shaun the Sheep movies do not have dialogue. And I was cleaning my house in anticipation of my husband returning. And I felt like I was really struggling to follow the plot because I would like look at the things that I was dusting. And so I turned the audio captions on and they're kind of cool. I really enjoyed it. I've watched a few other movies with those, like out of interest. The guy talks really fast. That's part of the fun. And Over the Moon is pretty cute. Remember back when like there weren't as many animated studios and like every now and then a pretty good Don Bluth movie would come out, or like Anastasia was pretty good and like Prince of Egypt was pretty good, and people would be like, it's pretty good, but it doesn't have that Disney magic.
Yeah.
Right. And then Disney movies stopped having that Disney magic for a while. Over the Moon is a good example of like the magic is missing. Like something's not quite there. It also suffers from me having watched it the day after I watched Onward, when it is also a movie about letting go of your dead parents and embracing your current siblings. So, yeah.
How'd that hit you personally?
I don't want to talk about it, Sean.
Great. I love my
siblings. I miss them. Very rude of a movie with that theme to come out after I haven't seen them for almost 2 years because of a pandemic.
Yeah, the animated feature category was an emotional minefield
it
for you.
Often is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Soul will and should win.
Yeah. I was going to say about Over the Moon, it's odd that this is the second or third time that the fifth spot was taken by a Netflix movie no one ever heard of.
Klaus was so good.
Klaus. I believe you. I didn't watch it.
Okay, it's really good.
it seems like they no longer are interested in
Below the Line.
What do you mean?
Like they don't really, they're not putting their muscle behind minor category wins.
Netflix isn't?
Yeah.
I think Netflix is, I mean, again, I have a gigantic Over the Moon swag package that
okay.
did not convince me, and one for Klaus, and, you know, this always happens with Netflix, where the Academy, and maybe it is, you know, out of what's campaigning, the Academy is no longer giving these, like, fourth and fifth nominations to animated feature to Trolls World Tour is not nominated, despite being good and being the first movie that came out during the pandemic.
Right.
The Croods 2 is not nominated, despite being perfectly good. You know, they're no longer like, oh, here's another non-Disney, non-Pixar animated thing that regular people like. That doesn't get nominated anymore. That said, Onward, Soul, and Wolfwalkers are all very good movies. I think Onward was underrated, if anything. I think people were kind of like, eh, this isn't the best one. And I found it funny and charming and touching. Did you like Wolfwalkers?
It was fine.
It's beautiful.
It's aggressively two-dimensional.
Yeah, but I love that. I'm like, yay, a man or woman or non-binary person sat down and drew, and now the drawings are moving, and I'm watching them. That doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah. Also, one of the main characters' name is Robin, which is always fun for me.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, Soul will and should win. It was one of my, I think it was one of my top five movies of the year.
Yeah.
It's great. It's... You know, the slight little, I know we ran on a representation rant, which is valid. That does not in any way make it not deserving of this award.
And just so easily avoidable is the thing. There's so many ways that they could have written around that and or cast around that. And that subplot where Tina Fey's in his body is not necessary thematically. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, I don't know, do better. But once you work your feelings through on that one, the movie, it makes it past it.
And it's also hilarious. There's a few Pixar movies that are great, but not hilarious. And the two moments of Soul I remember, like, mostly I remember the existential dread. But the moments I remember most are the joke about the Knicks.
The Knicks joke killed me. Cause I used to be a Knicks fan for a hot minute in middle school and like, yikes. Yeah.
With lauded NBA commentator Doris Burke making a split second cameo and the joke about Lincoln freaking out because Jackson gets to be on the 20. Yeah. It's a very funny movie.
Yeah. And Jamie Foxx did such good voice work in it. He act more Jamie Foxx and not in weird Blast from the Past Netflix sitcoms where you hit your junk on a banister rail.
What's that?
I don't, Dad, you're embarrassing me.
This isn't one of those things where I don't watch a lot of TV and so I'm like feigning ignorance. I have never heard of this.
I think it's on Netflix. Yeah. It's a show that's on Netflix. And anyway.
Welcome to the craft categories, kicking off with, you know, this is a moment of joy for us. Because after what, 20 years of trying to figure out which one is sound editing and sound mixing, I don't have to try anymore.
No one knows. No one needs to know. Maybe sound techs know, but we don't care anymore.
It's just sound. The award is just best sound with five good sounding movies. I mean, I don't know how specifically good the sound was in Mank, but Greyhound, News of the World, Soul, and Sound of Metal are all very nice sounding things. I think Sound of Metal will and should win because it's a movie about sound that edited its sound in really interesting, engaging ways that helped the movie a lot.
Right. Yes, exactly. If it doesn't win, it will be a confusing surprise. I do want to say, just, you know, quick, you can't handle the truth about Greyhound and News of the World. Liked them both. I embraced my inner 65-year-old man and enjoyed both of these movies.
Your inner 65-year-old man wants a submarine and a calming presence. Where mine wants a Western. And yet, surprisingly, I didn't love News of the World. Maybe if I had watched it on a better day or just in a better mood, I would have liked it. I liked Greyhound.
I mean, the thing about News of the World is that I truly don't understand how that is a movie that came out in 2020. Like, it just feels so old-fashioned. Like, it either feels like it came out in 1963 or in 2003. And we're not ready for a new wave of that movie.
I look forward to seeing what the next version of Westerns is, but it's not here yet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's The Mandalorian. It's basically The Mandalorian.
Okay.
But, Sound of Metal will win that Oscar, and probably only that Oscar. We'll get to it. Visual effects. This is the last category where I'm missing two nominees. Tell me about Love and Monsters,
Sean,
and the one and only Ivan.
You will like Love and Monsters. It is a very sweet movie. It is like a Zombieland kind of, you know, post-apocalyptic comedy. Yeah. Colin said, is this the one with Woody Harrelson? And then we got to the part where it was Michael Rooker and we were like, oh, Woody Harrelson was unavailable.
yeah, good enough.
Yeah, exactly. There's the same little girl actress in both Love and Monsters and the one and only Ivan. She is charming. She's particularly good in Love and Monsters. I really liked it. The monsters are super gross. This is probably my should win.
Really?
I mean, in some ways it's most visual effects, which is not always the right way to do this. But, like, it's some serious creature effects that none of them made me go, oh, that doesn't look good. It's like, you know, nothing is as good as Kong Skull Island when it comes to creature effects, but, like, it's, it could hold its own against Kong Skull Island.
Of all of the, and I saw some dogs at the drive-in this year. That was playing at drive-ins for a while, and I was like, what is that? I don't care. Oh, look, this screen over here is showing the original Candyman. That's my pick for the evening.
It's not as good as the original Candyman.
Okay, yeah, probably not. But that's interesting.
But you'll like it.
Floats across my... That might be a number one movie in America from one of those weird weekends. But anyway, maybe we'll see it that way.
I hated The Midnight Sky so much. So much.
If you ever want to know the exact movie that I will love and Robin will hate, it's The Midnight Sky.
It really is. It is the point where our tastes in movies diverge. The one and only Ivan is based on a children's book. It is about circus animals who are at a show at a mall and they escape. And then as soon as they escape, they realize they are in the middle of the suburbs and there's nowhere for them to escape to.
How was that loaded voice cast?
Mostly cashing a paycheck. Brooklyn, the little girl from the Florida Project does the voice. What's her
Brooklyn
last name?
Prince.
Yes. And she is so cute and I just want the best for her. But this movie is written by Mike White, which I thought was super interesting. I know, right? And there are parts of it that are interesting. It's surprisingly bleak for a children's movie about talking animals. But I don't really recommend it. But like, you know, if you're with your family, like if you're with kids and you need to watch something and they like animals, it's not going to make you mad.
Mike White, previously discussed on this show as the director of School of Rock, of course.
The writer.
The writer of School of Rock.
Richard Linklater directed School of Rock.
I always forget that because it doesn't seem like it could be true.
Neither of those things make any sense. And yet.
Yeah. So, and Mulan is here. All right. I thought Mulan was much more. If Mulan snuck in cinematography, I wouldn't have argued this.
Right.
I'm like,
or production design or costume design. Yeah.
Were there notable visual effects
in Mulan?
I guess.
There were visual effects involved with the fights, right? Because they did like gravity defying fighting. I don't know. I was surprised. So is Tenet going to win?
I guess. Like, it's only not going to win if people are pissed at him. And like, I'm pissed at him, Christopher Nolan. I'm pissed at him. So, like, maybe there's many others, but I don't think that's true. The Oscars like Christopher Nolan. You know, Dunkirk won a bunch of stuff. Tenet does have good visual effects.
Sort of.
I mean, they're great. They're badly colored, but other than that, they're functional. I mean, I think The Midnight Sky could win because everyone loves George Clooney. And that was very pretty. It had the Northern Lights and stuff. But I don't see anything here that's going to stop Tenet from winning. I don't know what, I'm not going to say what should win, having not seen two of them. What should win? Love and Monsters?
I'm going to go with Love and Monsters.
Great.
Yeah. And on to makeup and hairstyling.
Well, a lot could happen here. With Emma, period, you know, is it have a period because it's a period piece? I think you said that on a podcast several years ago. Hillbilly Elegy has, pretty people not looking pretty. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom has great, period makeup and hair. So does Mank. And I think the final movie here before we get to song that I haven't seen, Pinocchio.
Woof.
What's up? What's up with Pinocchio?
Did you ever see Return to Oz or like the Alice in Wonderland TV miniseries from our youth?
Yeah, it is, disturbing ones.
Yes, right. It is one of those movies where you're like, everything here is a nightmare.
I probably would have liked it then.
But yeah, honestly, it's probably the should win because like it's not a CGI puppet boy. It is a human child wearing wood makeup. And there is a trout man, and it's a lot of prosthetics. And we've talked before about how the makeup branch seems to have a confusing relationship with prosthetics. Like, I, for the life of me, don't understand why The Shape of Water didn't get a makeup nomination for Fishman. This is Fishman style makeup. So if they are less interested in awarding that, then I do think Ma Rainey's Black Bottom stands a good chance here because it does the looks good and has good dramaturgical properties job of makeup, right? Like you said, historically accurate. They do a really cool job of making Viola Davis's makeup break down over the course of the film because it's hot and everybody's sweaty and she's becoming increasingly erratic and her makeup shows it. And then also, I believe it's the first two black women nominated in this category.
I heard that, yeah. And I think the callous, you know, thinking about it just barely Oscar voters will say, that's a good opportunity to make ourselves feel good.
Exactly.
So I think that's going to win. I think it probably should win. You could convince me that Emma should win because the look of that movie is pretty much all there is to that movie.
Yeah, I would say that that's more of a costume movie. Right. There were some very cool wigs, but...
Right. Yeah, I think Ma Rainey's Black Bottom can and should win. I think it can and should win costume design as well. These nominees are the same with the exception of Mulan being here instead of Hillbilly Elegy. You know, Mank is, I don't think, going to win because it's very easy. You know, I don't mean to discount the work of doing costumes for something that happens in the 1930s, but like, we know what it's supposed to look like.
We know what it looks like.
And you did a good job and great. Pinocchio sounds like it's too weird. I just don't think Mulan's going to win anything because Mulan wasn't very good.
Right.
So again, it's Emma and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. The costumes in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom are so good.
Yeah.
And Emma is kind of an afterthought.
Yep. I agree.
So look for two in the, what's on people's bodies and heads categories for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Production design. I love the production design award, and this is a boring list of nominees for it. The Father, Ma Rainey, Mank, News of the World, and Tenet.
I'm gonna say that I think Tenet's gonna win here, because when it's an underwhelming list, it is what looked like a place you'd want to hang out.
Do you want to be on a boat that Elizabeth Debicki has her legs stretched out all the way across?
Correct.
I think Tenet is only going to win visual effects, and I think Mank is only going to win production.
Okay, yes. Mank actually is probably what will win here. I sort of have a mental block to Mank winning an Oscar in the way that I do to Glenn Close winning an Oscar. I'm like, I'll believe it when I see it.
You know, it's the most nominated movie, and at one point or another in this 78-year-long Oscar season, you know, every category, someone has said, Mank's going to win that one. I think it's the most likely to win. None of, other than The Father, none of them would surprise me. I actually think that the should win is probably News of the World. Mm. News of the World really nails, you know, a Western look that still has its own mood. It is not just the Western things. The sets are great. The way that they move through the you know, sequence with the weird separatist community has a much different look than the towns, has a much different look than when they're off in the middle of nowhere. I liked it a lot, but I'm betting Mank.
Score.
Advance, congratulations for dual nominee Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross with John Batiste in one of the,
Really, really glad that John Batiste gets a nomination here.
Yeah, yeah, because it was, and it's cool because it is a little different. It's not, here's the score album that is the sound, that just sounds the same from beginning to end. Because
right.
It's the score from the movie. It goes back and forth between fantastic, you know, film appropriate.
Spooky space stuff.
Spooky space stuff and jazz stuff from John Batiste. And it's great. I say congratulations because the only thing that can beat them is them. If it's not, if it's not Soul, it's going to be Mank. I guess in theory, News of the World is in it. Minari has a really nice score. It's not going to win. The Five Bloods has a really nice score. It's not going to win.
Right.
I think Soul can, will and should win.
Yes, I agree.
And song. Whoa. This one is something. You're forgiven if you have no idea what the nominated songs are, because what are they? Fight for You by Her from Judas and the Black Messiah. No idea what I've heard that song because I listened to it before I nominated. Don't remember it. Don't know where it was in the movie. Have no impression.
It's over the credits. I'm pretty sure.
Same Hear My Voice, a Daniel Pemberton song from Trial of the Chicago 7.
No memory. Yes. I feel like I need to rewatch Trial of the Chicago 7 so I can properly be angry at when it wins things. Or maybe manage that anger when it wins things, because, like, it's only decreased in my estimation. I know that while I watched it, I was like, this is fine. But I certainly don't remember the song.
know. And there were very few, like, knockout nominees anywhere this year.
Yeah.
Clearly the best is Husovic from Eurovision Song Contest. A movie I still haven't seen.
You should watch it. It's good.
The song is great. Diane Warren has a song that was in The Life Ahead. Maybe she'll finally win.
I doubt it.
And the Leslie Odom Jr. song from One Night in Miami. That's going to win because they know they screwed up by under-nominating One Night in Miami. One Night in Miami is not the best movie of the year. I don't think it was in my top 10, but it's very good. It should have gotten several nominations that it didn't get, including Best Director for Regina King. This is the only thing I think it has a chance of winning, so it will.
I dramatically prefer Leslie Odom Jr. winning an Oscar for song over for acting, which I think he is not good at doing in movies. My bad opinion, which I am now digging my heels into.
Are we agreeing that Speak Now will win and Husovic should win?
Yes. I haven't even listened to the Diane Warren song, but
there are two of them every year. I'm not exaggerating when I say twice per year I open an envelope and get either sheet music or CD single of a song I've never heard of from a movie I may or may not have seen from Diane Warren. And she signs all of them. I have like 10 Diane Warren autographs because,
I mean, her job literally is her job is to get Best Original Song nominations. And she's very good at it. The Lady Gaga one should have won. I mean, Nothing's Gonna Stop Us should have won.
Yes.
Back in the 80s. But if she should have won with Till It Happens to You.
The movie is fine. Is this one of the 2.5 you haven't seen?
That is one of the 2.5 I haven't seen.
It's fine. It's every time you watched a well-reviewed but unremarkable, lauded film from another country, and it was a little sad and had some good performances.
Sure. Okay.
Cinematography. It's, again, usually one of my favorite categories. This year, meh.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that Nomadland will win. Nomadland is definitely the one that while I was looking at it, I went, ooh, the most.
Right, right.
Of the ones listed. I don't have strong feelings here.
No, I also, well, I said that Mank would only win production design. I
strongly feel Mank should not win cinematography because I think it's ugly.
It shouldn't win. It's that black and white where you're like, did you just turn a switch? Did you like think in color and then Zack Snyder's Justice League, Justice is Gray edition, switch it to black and white for some reason? And yet, Mank is the most nominated movie. I mean, my what will win is tied between Mank and Nomadland. If you need me to pick, I'd probably say Mank. Out of these, I don't even know. Like, I guess Judas and the Black Messiah should win, but none of the five of these made me go, wow, what great cinematography.
Right, right. Editing!
Yeah. Sound of Metal. Like, I know it's tricky because the editing of the sound is technically in a different category.
Right.
But the way that the Sound of Metal is put together in all regards, is so impressive to me that I feel that it should win. The Father could win because it's tricky editing, which is not really what the category's about, but lots of voters think it is.
It's a very weird, like, I've never really gotten a bead on how to predict this category, because when I was coming up as an Oscars lover, that was during the years when Best Picture and Best Editing were entrenched. It was like the same every year. So you just picked whatever you thought was going to win Best Picture. And then things started getting weird. And I haven't really figured out what the new pattern is. So I don't know how to predict this. And so I always then default to what I think is going to win Best Picture, which in this case, spoilers, I still think Nomadland's going to win. So
we'll get to it in, I don't know, an hour.
Yeah.
I think Trial of the Chicago 7 will win here. There's a lot of, like, someone describing something, and there's a scene around them describing something while we cut back to the thing happening, and, you know, it's very showy editing, that, you know, does a decent job of keeping a story moving in a difficult way. So, sure, why the hell not? Screenplays. We're at we are on the border territory of major awards.
I think the screenplays, acting, director, best picture. That's what I talk about when I say major awards.
Hey, what'd you think of The Father, by the way, since it's in the last category in this one?
I really liked it. Yeah. Did you like it?
I liked it a good deal. Based on where I watched it, it was one of those things that was like, I'm watching this to see if it will dethrone any of the nominations and votes that exist in my mind.
Right.
Nope, it won't. Okay. So,
yeah.
I would never say it was one of my favorite movies of the year, but it was very good and, you know, illustrated dementia well. Again, not a fun time.
Yeah.
But with a good cast.
It's another one of our 2020 movies that probably was a better play.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a bunch of them. You can see how this would work really, really, really well as a play.
Yeah. It is nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, as is Borat's subsequent movie film. Again, no idea what words on what papers that even refers to. Nomadland, One Night in Miami, and The White Tiger. Because One Night in Miami is kind of underappreciated, I think Nomadland has this. It's Nomadland's to lose.
Yes.
Something weird could happen here, but I would be surprised.
All right, into original screenplay. This is what is not getting any other Oscars, but we want to give them an Oscar. See Jojo Rabbit last year.
Right.
Category.
That was last year. Anyway.
Right. And so is this going to be like, could Minari get it? I think that I am now very firmly in the Ye Jeong-yeon is going to win Best Supporting Actress camp.
I
still think Promising Young Woman is too polarizing. You know, I feel like I have a reasonably well curated Twitter list of people with good opinions about movies. And a lot of those people hate Promising Young Woman. So,
have we talked about how you feel about Promising? I don't know if we have.
We haven't, because I saw it so much later and both you and Camila talked about it on the show. I really liked it. I thought it was, this is going to sound weird, a fun time at the movies. And I keep getting increasingly angry about people not liking it, which is like their prerogative.
Right.
But, and like, I understand a lot of the like, thoughtful criticism of it. I'm like, okay, sure. But a lot of the criticism of it seems to boil down to, this movie is not properly feminist and therefore bad. And I'm like, oh, but it doesn't need to be. Like, to me, this movie is Kill Bill, right? Like, it's literally just, it's a revenge fantasy. And the fact that it has the ending that it has, it's a credit to like the helplessness that this movie is about should have a feel good fantasy that feels bad. I think that they nailed it.
Yeah, I think, this did a fantastic trick of, you know, making a movie that is real and grounded in terrible and vital subject matter, in a very honest way, and turning it into, as you said, an entertainment. I think the criticism you could have is if you personally don't feel that that is a thing that should be done, you could feel that way.
Okay.
But, I agree. I really like Promising Young Woman. You know, the opposite of some of these movies we've talked about, the farther I get from it, the more I like it.
Same.
I think it's going to win.
Okay.
I think that probably Minari should win, but insert rant about Oscar voters not comprehending words that aren't in the English language here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Sound of Metal is really in it. This doesn't feel like where Judas and the Black Messiah or Trial of the Chicago 7 will win. I think that it's a movie that got a lot of nominations, including Best Picture, and this is the most likely place for it to win. I wouldn't be surprised if I'm wrong, and it goes to any of these but Sound of Metal.
Yeah.
But I think Minari should win, and Promising Young Woman maybe will, but this is one of the ones where I really don't know what's going to happen.
I'm going to go ahead and say that I think Trials of Chicago 7 is going to win, because if that movie could win Best Picture, and I realize there's all sorts of ranked choice voting stuff going on there that isn't going on here, but, like, obviously the best thing about that movie is the, you know, snappy dialogue. So.
Right. Entirely believable. I think the consolation prize force will be strong, but I, you know, that's an easy thing to get wrong. So I can totally be wrong.
This is not a category that I feel confident in my prediction.
Hey, let's talk about famous people whose faces you know. It's the acting categories.
We started with Best Supporting Actor because, barring huge seismic shifts, Daniel Kaluuya is about to be an Oscar winner. And good for him.
Yeah, that's great news. I don't know what else could... Leslie Odom Jr., I guess, could win. He was the front runner at one point, but it's so obvious that the Academy doesn't really care about One Night in Miami.
Right.
Sacha Baron Cohen, I guess you could make a pained argument that he's going to get a year achievement award since Borat was also this year. Paul Racy is just happy to be nominated. Lakeith has no idea why he's here in this category. So, you know, I think Daniel Kaluuya is going to win. I think he should win. I think he should win 10 Oscars because he's fantastic.
Yes.
And it'll be great to see him win.
And I'm excited to see what he wears.
Yes.
Supporting actress. This one really seemed, there was a lot of question marks around this in the beginning, and it's still not locked down in any way. But do you agree that Yeo Jong-yeon has kind of locked it up at this point?
I think so. I certainly think so. She's won a number of important precursor awards. The Academy loves, or rather, the voters seemed to really like Minari, given what it's nominated for, and I don't think it's going to win another major award, so that makes a lot of sense that she would win. I don't think Olivia Colman's in it. I don't think Amanda Seyfried's in it. At one point, I truly believe that Maria Bakalova would win.
Me too.
That could happen, but the more I think about that performance, the more I'm like, this is a little out there for the Academy.
Yeah.
Even as she's the breakout star of the movie, it's, you know, it is a more, what word do you want to use?
Risque?
Risque performance than Borat, you know?
Right. I mean, like, her, like, some of her biggest scenes are, like, about incest, so... Yeah.
Incest and period blood. Like, that does not usually lead you to the Oscar. And Glenn Close, what I wrote yesterday was, I think Glenn Close will eventually win an Oscar when we least expect it. And boy, would this be when we least expect it.
Okay.
So it could happen. Hey, how'd you feel about Hillbilly Elegy, you know, by the way?
I gotta say, I had built it up in my brain as being, like, gonna be the worst movie that I watch for the Oscars this year. And it's not that. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like, it's mostly, it's just, as the kids say, it's very cringe. I didn't hate it as much as I expected to, and truthfully thought that, you know, I'm fine with Glenn Close having this nomination. Like,
she's good.
She does what she needs to do. I'm also...
That is a real person. If you're correct. From this part of the country, you know that lady.
Correct.
Well, 20 times.
And I also think that the casting of the main character and the kid version of the main character, stunning. Just like, wow, did they find the two most unexciting person from, where's it, Kentucky? Unexciting Eastern Kentucky white man, ages 12 and 25.
Yeah. Hey, it would shock me without shocking me if she won, but I think Yuzhun has it. Can start preparing her speech.
And that was what I was going to say, is that aside from her winning those precursors, she gave all-timer great speeches at the SAG and BAFTA Awards, particularly her BAFTA speech, where she was like, it's so wonderful to win an award from the snobby country. Like, how can you not immediately fall in love with her? And like, maybe if you had Glenn Close penciled in, you go erase it. And you're like, I want to see what she, how she roasts us.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, get your tissues ready. Chadwick Boseman will win Best Actor. His widow will appear and
is she
cry,
allowed?
And then we're all going to cry. I think so.
Okay, like, so at
are
one
they,
point,
are they gonna not?
At one point, Soderbergh was like, only nominees can accept awards.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want people who won't go to the Oscars because they don't want to get COVID to send, you know, a Native American representative, a la Marlon Brando.
And you had to be retired for so many years before going into the Baseball Hall of Fame until Roberto Clemente died in a plane crash trying to get relief to earthquake victims. And
okay.
Then they were like, he's in now! Like this, you know.
I mean, it would be, what a great way to complete Steven Soderbergh's ascent to supervillain in my brain. Right. He's pulled a real Christopher Nolan Aaron Sorkin on me this year to silence Chadwick Boseman's widow.
Right.
What a way to become my enemy for the rest of my life. Anyway, congratulations to Chadwick Boseman.
This and probably director are the locks of the night. I have seen people make an argument that Anthony Hopkins could win. That would be the case if The Father were an actual movie that existed in the world. Like, no one has seen it other than voters and Oscar's Death Racers. And, like, he doesn't need it. Anthony Hopkins doesn't need another award.
Right,
If it were a popular movie, we're doing it twice. If it were a popular movie, sure.
Or if he hadn't won an Oscar before.
Right?
Like, if it was, like, Anthony Hopkins in this, you know, incredible 50-year career gives and one of his best performances ever, sure. But that's not the case. So, again, barring incident, we know who's going to win this one.
And in Best Actress, I have no idea.
My gut still says Frances McDormand. That's still what my heart says. But honestly, anything could happen except for Vanessa Kirby winning. I feel like it. I will also be very surprised if Carey Mulligan wins. Again, I think that nobody likes Promising Young Woman. And I also think that everything that people dislike about Promising Young Woman is sort of centered around Carey Mulligan. The tone of the movie that people are objecting to comes from her. But man, I mean, Viola, if she hadn't won in the past few years, but Frances also won in this category more recently than when Viola won. So like, I don't know. I do not know.
This is the most interesting race of the night. Vanessa Kirby won't win. Did you like that movie?
Sean, what do you think?
I think no, probably.
No, I mean, I respect it in certain ways. Once again, I bet that was a pretty good play.
Yeah, yeah.
I gotta say, folks, in Pieces of a Woman, there is a scene where a judge says, well, it's highly unusual, but I'll allow it. And I had to get up and start walking around because I was like, is this coming into my ears in this third decade of the 21st century?
Vanessa Kirby was great. I really think she did a great job.
Okay.
I don't mind. Do you mind her being nominated? I don't mind her being a nominee for this movie.
I don't immediately have a justice for fill in the blank person. I don't know who was the sixth place. Like, I know Amy Adams at one point. She doesn't belong there. I didn't see the movie Michelle Pfeiffer was in, so, you know, I always love Michelle Pfeiffer. But anyway, I didn't need to have seen that movie.
no one needed to see that movie. So she's not going to win. I think Andra Day is the other least likely to win, in spite of the fact that she won the Golden Globe, so, like, I'm not discounting her.
Right.
It wouldn't shock me.
Also a really good performance.
Yes.
But I don't think people are, like, if you asked, not just, like, people down the street, if you asked, like, your Facebook friends, who are people who like movies, what is the United States versus Billie Holiday, how many people are going to be like, ah, yes, the Oscar-nominated film from 2020, directed by Lee Daniels. No one knows this movie exists.
No. And I've looked at the expert predictions. Frances McDormand is fourth on that list. And it's like, Yeah, but it's Frances McDormand. Like, her winning should never be marked with anything other than, yep.
As sure my did. Dad would say, the name of the category is Best Actress. Although he would probably apply that to Viola Davis here. I still think it's Fran.
And surprisingly, on those, like, expert opinion charts, Carey Mulligan's in first.
That's, that makes no sense to me.
I believe, I understand why people think that. She is a actress that a lot of people like, who has never won, who gave a great, difficult performance in a movie that has a lot of nominations. Sure, makes perfect sense. Promising Young Woman is too cool for the Academy, and particularly this performance is too interesting. This is one of those performances that is too good to win. So for me, that means it's going to default to Viola Davis. I think that Nomadland has become about some of these other categories in the voters' minds.
Okay.
As much as Frances McDormand is great and is almost the whole movie, she also just won one. She has two already. You know, she does a great job that we've kind of seen before.
Yeah, for sure.
Other than, like, a few stray moments of rage, you can't point to this performance and show me all of the ways that it's much different than Three Billboards. So, I think Viola Davis is so good, and it's such a big performance that I think Viola Davis is going to win, and I think that Carey Mulligan should win. But
I didn't even say my should win. I guess I think Andra Day should win. That doesn't feel right. I do not know. My only, like, my hesitation with Viola's performance is I feel like there's a touch of category fraud here. Like, obviously she's the main female character and she's the title character. But this movie is not about her.
This movie is the one where if you put everyone in supporting,
it would make sense. Like, right.
Okay, fine. Not Judas and the Black Messiah.
Exactly.
For all these reasons, I don't know who's going to win this.
Right. But, you know, Viola Davis, I have no problem with her having two Oscars. I want her to have six Oscars. So, right. You know, I really feel like I have no idea what's going to happen and I don't imagine being disappointed. So that's a nice situation to be in as an Oscars viewer.
Sure. This is the exciting one. This is the announcement I am waiting for.
Yes.
On Oscar night. As much as I am also waiting for the announcement of Best Director, because I am absolutely positive that Chloe Zhao is going to win, and that's going to be really nice.
Yes, having another woman win Best Director is fantastic, especially having a woman of color win is fantastic. Yay, hooray. And once again, joy that Aaron Sorkin was not even nominated.
Could anyone else win this? I
no.
don't think so.
Yeah. Who? Like, who?
Fincher. Like, theoretically.
Okay. Oh, man. If David Fincher wins, like, it's just gonna... What a big bucket of cold water falling all over everything that would be.
I looked at the Best Director Wikipedia page, which has what would ordinarily be a concerning subcategory that's like diversity statistics, which I think is on there because so that we can look up how stunningly undiverse Best Director is.
Yes.
And that's when I went, oh my God, not only is there only one female winner, there are only seven female nominees and two of them are now.
Correct.
There were five female nominees in history before this year, and none until 2000, two of those are in the 20th century.
Right. And I think there's been six black men directed or best director nominees.
And none of them have won.
Correct.
Spike Lee has been nominated once.
Right.
This category.
Spike Lee was not the first person named Spike nominated for best director.
Now there's a trivia question. Who is it?
Spike Jones.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. And we arrive at Best Picture. As a reminder, the nominees are The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, Minari, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, and The Trial of the Chicago 7. Go first.
Okay. If I were voting, I would vote for Minari.
Same.
That I wouldn't be like, hooray! You know, like, I liked Minari a lot. But it is not a movie that I am, like, going to carry with me through the rest of my life, I think. None of these are that. Again, we've said a million times, maybe I'm just depressed. Maybe it's because I'm not going to the movie theaters. So I guess that's my should win. I still think Nomadland will win. I will be angry if Trial of the Chicago 7 wins. That's really the only other one that seems possible. But again, Best Picture is always a mystery.
It is, especially in the last few years.
Yeah.
I would vote for Minari, and I would be very happy about it. Minari was number 3 on my list for last year. And my number 1 is never nominated, because I put some shit like Suspiria or Anomalisa or Mudbound as my number 1.
Right.
Pretty much every time. 40-year-old Virgin was my number 1, and Five Bloods was my number 2. I would not be as pumped to vote for Minari as I would be to vote for Five Bloods, but I gave it a 10. Those are the only 3 tens I handed out in all of 20. It should win, and I think there is the slightest chance that it will. But really, I think it's going to be either Nomadland or Trial of the Chicago 7. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be the Trial of the Chicago 7. The precursor awards have gone a lot of different places, but a couple of them have gone to Chicago 7. And if there were a Moonlight in this list, if there were a...
Everybody's second choice?
Everybody's second choice,
but I mean, a large contingent of first choice, and then of the rest, everybody's second choice. Right. That's how you get a Moonlight win.
Right. And yes, and a movie that feels like it will be on best of the decade lists. You know, a last Moonlight was my number 1 movie of the 2010s. I don't know if any of these movies, maybe Minari, would are going to last like that. In the absence of a force like that, where Nomadland will get some votes, Minari will get some votes, Judas and the Black Messiah will get some votes, I think that's when you have a Green Book situation, where it defaults to the movie that feels like an Oscar-y movie to the big old voting block.
Yeah. Risking a situation. Like, there is this feeling right now, and the data doesn't actually support this, but there's this sense that it's like Star Trek movies now, where we're going to have a good, cool Best Picture winner, followed by a, okay.
Right.
Followed by a good, cool Best Picture winner. Like, it's not one-to-one like that. But like, you know, going from, like Moonlight and then Shape of Water, I think, weirdly is both.
Yes.
It both was, it's like, oh, this is a movie about having sex with a fish monster. That's really cool. But also like, okay, this is kind of boring. And that's such a weird thing to say, but it was like, that didn't feel like an exciting Best Picture winner. Let's put it that way. Followed by Green Book. Yikes. Followed by Parasite. It feels like we're due for another Green Book.
It does feel like we're due for another Green Book. On the other hand, this is the most diverse list of nominees in history, they keep telling us, and three of the last four Best Picture winners are Moonlight, Shape of Water, and Parasite. Like, you could look at it that way and say it's different now. Green Book is the aberration.
Yeah.
I this could be just preparing myself, because I might think that Trial of Chicago 7 is the worst nominee.
That's another reason that I was like, I need to rewatch it, because this is a weird year in that I did not hate any of these. There's almost always a Best Picture nominee where I'm like, hated it.
And I don't hate it. I would probably give all of these an 8 or above, but okay. Trial of the Chicago 7 would be the lowest 8.
Yeah, I think Trial of the Chicago 7 and Mank are the two where I'm like, all right, like, I don't have love for those movies in any way, but I wasn't, like, mad at them at any point.
Right, right. I was only mad at Mank when people are like, it's a great movie. And I'm like, no, it's not.
Judas and the Black Messiah and Promising Young Woman are both in the same category for me, where I'm like, I loved watching this movie and I highly recommend it. If I really start thinking about it, then I can, like, I start pegging criticisms at them. Yes. Like, in particular, I think Judas and the Black Messiah gets very narratively messy towards the end and is largely because the performances are so strong and compelling. I think Lakeith Stanfield really does a lot with a character that is underwritten. But
it's also the only one of the nominees that cut out a scene involving a former co-host of this podcast.
That is a very important point. So immediate deduction of 10 points.
Justice for Aaron. Release the cut that Aaron Kleiber's in. Or at least put it on the Blu-ray so we can see it later.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think Judas and the Black Messiah will win.
No, yeah.
I might,
but it's just, it's an interesting field. Yeah, I don't know how I would rank these. Like, I guess I would probably, like, if I'm going to rank them, which movies am I going to watch again? It's Promising Young Woman and Judas and the Black Messiah, followed by maybe Minari and Nomadland. The ones that I really respect, The Father and Sound of Metal are way up there.
What's second on your should win?
I don't know. I guess, like, I am totally cool with Nomadland winning. So I guess that. I thought Sound of Metal was really, really good. This is where I have the, but it doesn't feel like an Oscars movie, right?
No.
Like, Sound of Metal feels like a good episode of TV.
Promising Young Woman is probably second on my should win, and it also doesn't feel like an Oscar movie. You
know? Yeah.
It feels like a thing that Neon put out that I would have said, this should have got more nominations.
Right. Yeah. Right. I keep saying I wish that Promising Young Woman were like a simple favor where it's like 3 years from now, people are like, you know what movie I really liked?
Yeah.
As opposed to like getting all of this attention and making men feel that they need to make it very known that they did not care for it. And also the women who want those men to love them. Sorry. I'm feeling bitchy.
In short, I will kind of groan, but not Green Book level groan, if Trial of Chicago 7 wins. I will be like, yep, if Nomadland wins, and I'll be pleasantly surprised if Minari wins. And if anything else wins, I will be stunned.
I think I'll be the most, like, are you fucking kidding me if Mank wins? But again, I don't think Mank's going to win anything.
I don't think Mank still exists. I think if we played Mank on Netflix right now, it would just short out and reboot your TV. For a movie that is everywhere and has 10 Oscar nominations, boy, did it fly out of
our mind. Right. Yeah. Okay, so because we talked forever, I think it's time for our impossible trivia questions.
I will ask you briefly. Is this going to be an entertaining Oscar night?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I truly don't understand exactly. For those who don't know, Steven Soderbergh is one of the producers, and he hates Zoom and has forbidden Zoom, and originally was forbidding. It was like, you're coming to LA or you're not at the Oscars. And eventually relented, and they created satellite Oscars in London and Paris, I think. So people will, it'll be like with the Golden Globes where they had like bi-coastal presenters. This will be across the world, presenters and acceptors, but no Zoom. And they also are, he's talking a big game about, you know, this being the most cinematic Oscars in years. And I don't know what that means. I don't think the Oscars should be cinematic. It should be a show. It is literally a TV show, and it should be like, you win an Emmy for making a good Oscars. So get over yourself.
My cold take, I don't want them to mess with the Oscars. I want them to give every award out on the show.
Yeah.
I want to give 5 songs, not quite in full, but close to in full.
Yeah.
I want some old Hollywood person to make a big speech. I want a couple of jokes at the beginning. That's it. I want
a weird montage with no connective tissue.
Right. I want one of those, and I want In Memoriam. I don't want reinvent it. I know the ratings are going down. The ratings are going down because the ratings for everything are going down. And also, viewing habits are more fractured than ever. It's never going to get ratings like the Super Bowl, except that the ratings are going to continue to drop and just do the normal Oscars.
Yes.
That's not what'll happen this Sunday. And as much as I don't think it'll be good, I'm very curious to see what it is.
Yes. I'm also potentially going to watch this in my friend's backyard. And so, I don't know how my viewing experience is going to be because of that. I don't know. I've watched the Oscars at 3 a.m. on my couch by myself in South Africa. I feel like every experience watching the Oscars is a good experience for me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's my favorite thing.
Clearly, we've been here for 2 hours, and and that was restraining ourselves.
Yes.
There are on this bullet list that we're skipping. If you have listened to all of this, wow, aren't you nice?
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate that. I do have a full list of predictions and rundown at PittsburghMagazine.com. Robin will be Oscar-thotting all week on Twitter.
Yeah, if you are on Twitter, I'm a hitch died, and I will be telling you everything that I could ever think about the Oscars for the next 10 days.
And as this is a bonus episode, we conclude with impossible trivia. Robin, I bet you have one, and I bet I'm not going to get it.
Okay, my impossible trivia is based on the run times of the Best Picture nominees. Okay. I want you to spitball guess the average runtime in minutes of this year's Best Picture nominees.
There are a few relatively short ones this year. This is not one of the years where they're all 2 hours and 20 minutes. I will say the average is an hour 52.
The average is 1 hour 59 minutes.
All right.
Yes.
Great.
And the shortest of those is The Father. Mm-hmm. Which is 97 minutes long. And so my second question is, how far back do you have to go to get another Best Picture nominee that is under 100 minutes?
Ooh. Yeah, it doesn't feel like that has happened for a while. I don't have the Oscar recall that you do, so I'm not going to be able to name it. But I will say that there is probably a weird one from the mid-2000s. I'll say it's in 2005.
So that was also, I was going to guess similarly. That's what my gut told me. But it actually is fairly recently. In 2017's Lady Bird was 95 minutes long.
Lady Bird was only 95?
I know.
Minutes long?
Yeah.
Man, everything's good about that movie.
Right?
Including its compact runtime. Well, here is my impossible trivia. I, at some point in the past 24 hours, became vaguely aware of the existence of the Fangoria Chainsaw Awards, the Academy Awards of Horror. And I'll just ask, what do you think won Best Wide Release Movie? Their Best Picture equivalent is Best Wide Release Movie.
This year?
They were held last night.
Oh my goodness.
The 2020 Best Wide Release Movie at the Fangoria Chainsaw Awards was...
Was it Freaky?
No. I will tell you this also won Best Kill, but Best Lead Performance, progressively, this is now, they have non-gendered their acting awards.
Okay.
Best Lead Performance, Best Director, and Best Screenplay.
The Pants Movie?
No, I will give you the nominees.
Okay.
Underwater, Gretel and Hansel, The Hunt, and The Invisible Man.
Oh, was it The Invisible Man?
It was The Invisible Man.
Oh, I like that. Good for you, Fangoria Chainsaw Awards.
Elizabeth Moss getting best performance at Lee Whannell for both directing and the screenplay. You won't get best, the other two bests, which is Best Limited Release Movie, just Color Out of Space.
Never heard of it.
It's an H.P. Lovecraft adaptation with Nicolas Cage in a sub-Mandy but still unhinged performance.
Okay.
Best International Movie was La Llorona, no surprise. And what's their other best movie? They have a Best First Feature. And I had never heard of that one. It's called Come to Daddy. best premiere movie, best straight to streaming movie, and that was Host, the Zoom horror movie.
Cool.
That's like 6 minutes long. It's a pretty good list. Possessor Uncut won a couple of things. They gave some special achievement to Joe Bob Briggs. It's a nice list of awards. Good for them. And Invisible Man should definitely be an Oscar nominee, but it's not.
Yeah, that movie I feel like that could have easily got a visual effects nomination.
If it was in visual effects, it would be my should win.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you see a little bit of his head and it's convincing.
All right. Thank you so much to listening to our self-indulgent Oscars pregame show. I assume we'll have a similar self-indulgent Oscars postgame show.
Yeah. I don't think it'll be this long.
No.
Because there's less to say, and, you know, at least 12 times it'll be, sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Why not that one? Yeah. Hang around next week for that. In the meantime, next week will also be the release of our Freaky episode, the most recent film we've ever done.
I'm excited to watch it later tonight, and I'll talk to you tomorrow about that.
Yeah.
Awesome.